At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom. When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Today on The Grave Talks, part two of our conversation about the many spirits at the Brown Grand Theater in Concordia, Kansas. Tanya, what kind of evidence have you collected throughout your investigations there?
Predominantly what we've got are photographic anomalies, what we like to call photographic anomalies. I often invite our guests to take as many pictures inside the theater as they want, because that's half the fun. I mean, for some folks, this is this huge community landmark that they've grown up with, you know, that they've seen their whole lives, but they've never actually had the opportunity to kind of prowl around, you know, go backstage, look at these things, you know, take your picture. If you want to pretend you're famous, stand on stage and have somebody take your picture and do this and make this your own experience. So we often invite our guests to go ahead and, you know, take those photographs, take as many as they want. And we often on tours will get some interesting photographic anomalies. Usually I ask them to take several at a time when they're taking photos that don't include them so that we can look at if there's any changes. So we've got some lovely, lovely evidence of light orbs kind of moving through the downstairs, through the main part of the theater in that main sort of gallery area. We've gotten a lot of what we call EMF or PK for those who sort of know it under that term, hits, and that some things in the theater read or show an electronic field that don't seem like they should. They don't have any electronic parts or moving parts, and yet they give off this electronic field, which indicates that something is going on. It can indicate other things, but in this case, because there are no other things when we take our base reading, suggests that it may be maybe ghostly activity. We also have taken a number of EVP recordings, electronic voice phenomena, which are things you can't hear as they're happening in lifetime. Often you can't hear these things with your naked ear, so to speak. Mm-hmm. The recorders catch them because they are much more sensitive. They have a much greater range of ability to recognize these sounds than the human ear does. And we have four or five really interesting recordings of things in the theater, things that have happened from different things that are going on, different potential ghosts that we've talked to. So we use a number of tools to kind of generate this evidence and capture it.
You know, when people go to a production there or an event at the theater, there's so much activity around that you're never going to really experience the paranormal side of the Brown Grand unless it's quiet and you can be in there when it's not just bustling with activity and you can actually listen to the theater.
Exactly.
When so much is going on, you're not going to be as open to it. And it can't get through to you because there's too much activity.
Absolutely. And when other sounds are in the theater, it's very difficult to even record EVPs. Imagine trying to hear some of these things with your actual ears. It would be virtually impossible, which is one of the reasons why it's much more helpful to have those tours, be able to use the theater when we don't have other things going on, so that you know that the light anomalies are not a reflection from something on the stage or some kind of lighting for production or, you know, something like that. You have that ability to just really get your own raw data. And I always tell people when they come to a ghost hunt, you know, they'll say, well, I don't have any equipment for this. I wish I had equipment for this. And I always tell them, well, you know, your best equipment is always going to be your own senses, because you will never find a stronger bit of evidence than what you personally experience. I could show you thousands of photographs and you might scoff at about half of them. But the first time you walk into a room and the hair on the back of your arm stands up because you've encountered something that you don't have a clear explanation for, I'll never convince you otherwise that that place isn't haunted, plain and simple, because what we feel, what we recognize with our own five senses becomes how we create that reality, becomes what we recognize as the truth.
And I do think that just because I remember when I lived there that people would talk about it being haunted. So I would imagine that out of curiosity too, you've had people come, of course, from Concordia, but the surrounding cities, like I'm going to drive up there and we're going to do a ghost hunt with Tanya sometime in the near future, which I think would be super fun. But I would imagine out of curiosity alone, people would have loved to walk in there when there's not a production and do this.
Oh, yeah. People just love scary stories. And that was one of the things, you know, I also kind of got involved in this movement with the Brown Grand about the same time that Melissa was talking about, when Jason Grogan was still director, kind of got loosely involved. I wasn't leading a tour yet, but we were kind of building up to that point. Sort of working on some pre-groundwork, working with some of the crews who were coming in and doing the investigations. This idea of, you know, what if we could just do this for ourselves? And what if it was something that, you know, we were able to vet, we were able to get true control over by, you know, hand selecting our own investigator for this, having the editorial sort of selections on what went into that tour, what went into the historical part of that tour. And so when I pitch this tour to members of the community who say, well, I don't know, maybe I want to take this, but I'm not sure, I always remind them, you know, that you're going to get, part of this is going to be the history, this interesting story of how this theater was built and all of the people involved. Because, you know, a place is never really a place without the characters that are involved with it. And so then that's kind of how we look at this. We look at this in terms of, here are our characters. Here are the people who make this story important, who make it matter. It's just half of them are dead. And so that's the hang up on the story. And then the second half of it are these ghost stories ranging all the way back until, funny enough that you talked about Jack and Hannah Lisa. One of Jack's own stories is featured in the tour. It's one of the earliest ghost stories sort of from the long history of evidence of ghostly encounters in the Brown Grand. His story is actually one of the first.
Can you share that story with us?
Yes, absolutely. And so it was kind of told to me secondhand by a nice, reliable source, someone who used to be in Melissa's position, who used to be the director over at the Brown Grand, said that Jack always told her the Brown Grand was haunted, going back into when it was still a movie theater, because Jack would get very frustrated because, you know, he would have teenage kids work in the theater, you know, and you have all these levers and buttons and all this stuff to run all of the equipment. And he was always, you know, sort of scolding them, make sure that you're getting those windows that face out onto the street closed, make sure that you're getting the projection window closed, getting all of these things shut nice and tightly, because we want to make sure that everything is, you know, good and secure. It's not going to get rained in or it's not going to get tampered with, all of these things. And then he would come back in the morning and, oh, they would all just be open again. It would be as if those kids didn't pay any attention to what he had told them to do. And so in a fit of just sheer desperation in terms of how to get this done, when some of those renovations were being done on the theater, Jack actually stayed in the theater for a little bit of time and actually stayed upstairs in the dressing rooms and slept there and actually just stayed overnight, treated it as though it was his home briefly while they were doing some of those renovations. And he reported that during the night, one night, very late, about approximately midnight, he could hear footsteps out on the main stage area, which is just below the dressing rooms, kind of right around the corner and down the stairs from the dressing rooms. And he could hear men's voices, very sharp, very businesslike, as if a transaction or a business meeting were going on. And so he got up to investigate, find out what was causing these noises, who this was that had gotten into the theater, went downstairs, came around that last sort of bend coming down from the dressing rooms, and all of the noise just stopped. No more footsteps, no more voices, and he flipped on the lights to a completely empty stage, which is quite vast. I mean, you can't, you know, being reasonable and being skeptical here, you can't escape that stage quietly and quickly in that amount of time. It's very difficult to sort of get scurried out where you can't be found. And he searched but could find no one to have caused this. And of course, all throughout this, the windows are still being opened. His projection room's window is still popping open. The projection window, in fact, that Sue Sutton saw Earl standing in front of many, many years later. So it all kind of connects together. It all becomes this good sort of, not ironclad case by any means, but good coincidental case, right, for all of these things being connected.
And, you know, one thing about a theater is that it's the acoustics. You know, you have to work on the building and the acoustics of the building. And so often when there's not an audience in there, sound really travels.
Oh, yeah.
So you would hear somebody walking off. You would hear them talking because it would be amplified in the empty theater.
Absolutely. Think about it. It's literally what its job was designed for. I mean, it was literally designed to be able to carry these sounds to the maximum capacity from one side to the other so that it would be crystal clear, you know, in a time particularly before microphones were as clear and concise and small as they are now. So that those acoustics are great. And for anybody who's ever acted on that stage, you know that the acoustics are something you struggle with, particularly in that backstage area. You have to be very careful how you walk, because your footsteps will echo out front. People can hear you walking. So it's unlikely that somebody just simply walked off the stage when they heard him coming and then disappeared out into the theater and escaped. Also, those doors are very heavy. They're also very loud just by themselves.
One question, and it's not associated with the Brown Grand, that I want to ask you, Tanya. I mean, I guess it is associated with the Brown Grand. Napoleon Bonaparte Brown's house in Concordia is also one when you would drive by it, you would be like, I bet that house is haunted. Have you heard any stories about that?
We have heard some stories. It's privately owned, so it's not available for tours or anything like that. And we try to give our private owners as much space and privacy as we can on that. But we have heard some stories that the figure of a woman can be seen sometimes walking across the garret up there at the front of the house on what once upon a time used to be a small walkway. It would have been like the equivalent of a widow's walk. So we've heard that sometimes is still something that people report seeing, although they've not reported that to us. When I asked them about this, if they wanted any information added, you know, in terms of what had happened there, they very politely declined, saying that they wanted to make sure that, you know, what activities happened in their house did not change or grow, which suggests to me that, yes, it's haunted, and yes, some things have happened to them, but they're not interested in exploring that. And I don't fault them. I understand that entirely. For
totally
anybody who's ever worked
that
in a haunted location or lived in a haunted location, you don't want to make your own situation worse either.
And going back to the Brown, when they're doing renovations too, a lot of times that stirs it up. So I could see new people coming in to someone's home and trying to look for something that I think would just stir it up even more.
Yes. You always have to keep that in mind. And be conscientious. I try to always be conscientious of any place that we go in terms of reserving privacy for all owners, you know, keeping their information safe, keeping their home safe, and keeping them safe. I mean, mm-hmm. we do no one any great service by increasing their haunting and making it unlivable. We do them no good either.
Right.
And so we certainly don't want to make things worse or cause harm in a situation by poking at it too aggressively.
And because I used to live in Concordia, I'm only asking this out of my own curiosity, but are there other locations in the city that you feel are haunted?
Yes.
So what other places have you discovered in the Concordia area that are haunted besides your house that you grew up in?
There is a retired funeral home here in Concordia whose director may not have left. Who still sometimes to the residents of this now as an apartment building, his presence can still sometimes be felt. There are a number of interesting and odd happenings out in the cemetery at Pleasant Hill. In fact, we've taken some very interesting EVPs, electronic voice phenomena, out in the cemetery itself. So there are some interesting stories associated with that. There are a couple of stories associated with the convent, with the Nazareth Mother House, and with the college, believe it or not, with Cloud County Community College itself.
My old college?
Correct.
And the funny thing is that the college itself doesn't really, it's not really what you think about a college. It kind of felt to me like a high school, like a big high school. A lot of things are in one building. At least it was back then when I went 100 years ago, feels like. But it isn't a place that, like, I never, when I went there, never thought, oh, this is haunted. So what do you think has happened?
There are always stories of things that have happened, some that, and whenever you look at a situation that stems from terrible tragedy, you want to always be sort of mindful of victims of that terrible tragedy, but often tragedies can sometimes result in an atmospheric problem or an atmospheric change that can lead to what we like to call a residual haunting, meaning something that maybe is not interacting with the rest of the world, but simply repeating a moment in time. So there is some discussion about a hallway, particularly in the center of Cloud, where a gentleman can be seen coming down the hallway who goes through one of the doors and then doesn't return. So there's some interesting stories like that coming out from there, some interesting things that come across from some of the dorm buildings. They've seen literally thousands of students, so it's easy to see how, you know, this might have been someone's happiest place or not happiest place, as the case may be, since either are roughly equally likely to create, you know, a residual haunting or even an active, more intelligent haunting. So there's all kinds of stories like that. Instances where things have happened that now seem to repeat. In fact, the Brown Grand's got its very own residual haunting, which actually takes place outside the building. Doesn't actually happen within the theater, but takes place out there on 6th Street, coming across the 6th Street from the grocery store. Police officers and members who worked at the grocery store reported to us on more than one occasion, or tell the story in terms of more than one person telling the story for more than one occasion, of a group of people coming across 6th Street in military uniforms, and the woman is wearing a fancy dress, but not like a ball gown, just a fancy dress of a different period of time, coming across 6th Street and walking up to those big oak doors out in front of the building and then passing through the doors without opening them.
Really?
And in a couple of instances, the police have actually been called to come out and check this to see if somebody has gotten into the theater. And they come out and check it. They can often report, you know, sort of finding the smell of cigarette smoke or cigar smoke, sometimes finding the smell of a woman's perfume kind of still hanging in the air and no people present.
And multiple people have seen that.
Multiple people have seen that. So it falls into the interesting category of possible residual haunting in that at least one of those cases happened in January when there was snow on the ground. So not only did this group of folks cross 6th Street in the snow without coats in an active sort of cold moment, snowy moment, but did not leave any footprints and did not seem to recognize that it was cold and snowy.
And it was so real. At one point, people called the police.
So that's how real it was. People thought it was real, thought people were going into the theater, that they were sneaking into the theater, and called the police.
And a weird group of people to go sneaking in the theater through the front door.
But yeah, it's in costumes. You wouldn't think people in costumes would walk up to the front door in the middle of the night. But I guess maybe being a theater, they expected sometimes theater goers are that way or theater folks are that way. I don't know.
But, you know, if you see it, it would be so weird that I think I would call the cops, too. Like, I don't know what this is, but there's some people going in.
There's some people going across the street, going in, and we don't know why. So, but there are a few sort of ideas. There's some theories as to why that may be happening. Although I, you know, sort of it's one of those moments where you have to kind of look at it and go, well, this could go either way. But it's important also to note that when they did those renovations on the front of the building, you know, it's got that lovely native limestone. Some of that native limestone was recycled or upcycled, I guess, for lack of a better term, from Camp Concordia. So when you're pulling things in from other places, you know, there's the big theory, the stone tape theory that was set up in the 70s by a man named, I think his name was it Lechberg, I think, literally talks about the idea of native stone and, you know, sort of those things holding that property, holding that charge almost.
Yeah.
And then just rebroadcasting it. So if this was something maybe that happened at Camp Concordia, you know, they're going on furlough or they're going into town off of break or something, taking their weekend off and, you know, going out to see a show or something, it makes perfect sense.
Now, have you been able to go back to your childhood home and investigate it at all? Or did your parents move out of there a long time ago?
It doesn't exist any longer.
Oh, so it's totally gone.
It was totally gone. Was not able to go back and investigate it as it is totally gone.
Would you have done that if you would have had the opportunity? Because this is a discussion I've
Probably.
Had with my sister. I don't want to go back in the house that we grew up in as a child, but she actually has.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I don't want anything to be like, oh, I remember her. I'm going to head back to wherever she lives. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just don't want to, I don't want to interact with it again. And she had no
problem.
I
think that's a fair assessment too. Some, again, it goes back to that, what you can live with in your real life moments. And so you never want to go too far or push too hard.
Melissa, how often are you doing the paranormal tours? You know, I know we talked about there's a big one in January, but are all Tanya's tours listed on the website?
Yeah, anytime we have either a rental where like people are renting to come in and investigate, that's open to the public, all of that's on our website. All of Tanya's tours are on our website. Tanya's actually got one coming up on October 28th. It's called Halloween Haunts, and it's going to be a 2-hour tour, and she's going to really talk about, of course, the Brown Grand history and the haunted history here, but she's going to be branching out into Concordia's haunted history as well. So this is a first debut of Halloween Haunts. She actually hasn't done this tour exactly like this before. And she just had one a couple weeks ago. In September, we had an afternoon haunt at the end of September, and that went really well. It was at one of those 75-minute tours. But yeah, I mean, Haunted Rooms America, they've rented the theater again in December and in February, and those links are on our website already, and those tickets are on sale. So visit us at browngrand.org/events, and you can see all of our haunted activities coming up, but also the rest of our season.
And I think that I want to go on Tanya's because I am interested in the Concordia haunts as well as the Brown Grand. Obviously, I'd be interested in that. But I think the Concordia haunts would be really fascinating to me. So is there one story that you would like to share as a little tease for your tour?
We're gonna talk about a little bit of all different kinds of things as we get into haunted Halloween. So I actually have a couple of different cemeteries I'm going to talk about, and I've brought pictures and I brought what EVP recordings we had for this. So you're actually going to get a chance to kind of experience some of our evidence for these things. So I don't want to say too much because we've debuted some of these stories, we've worked on them, but I don't want to give too much away. But a lot of the things I talked about today, in particular, some of our experience out in Pleasant Hill is going to be what we talk about. And I will tell just one little short story because this is one of the funniest of the bunch. Or at least it starts out funny, then it gets kind of sad in the middle, and it's funny again at the end. So when I taught at Cloud, I used to be an instructor at Cloud. I would work with students in terms of when they wanted to learn how to be ghost hunters, teaching them how to use their equipment, and just, you know, teaching them, you know, decorum, going out, walking around, figuring out how to do these things. You know, who do you talk to? Who do you ask for permission? How do you do this respectfully? Because we always want to show sort of proper respect to where we came from, to the places that we go. We want to take good care of these things, because that's our future as well as our past. We want to make sure that these things are protected as we move forward into these things. And on this particular instance, I took a group of students, about 10 of them, out into Pleasant Hill so that they would have a chance to take some EVPs out there, take some pictures, you know, learn how to do some of these things. And I had one particular student, I won't tell you his name, on this tour. And he had just really not had the best of evening in terms of this tour. He had already dropped and broken a piece of his own equipment, and he'd stepped in a hole and fell in the cemetery. So he was not having the best of moments with this. And so everybody else is, you know, sort of milling around, taking their pictures and doing all of this stuff. And he had sort of draped himself over a gravestone because he was very frustrated with things. He said, "Can we go home yet? Are we done? I think I'm done. Can we go?" And I said, "Well, yeah, in a few minutes." I said, what's the big deal? Like, I know you're just going home. Like, what's the rush here? "I want to go home. I'm frustrated. I want to go home and have a beer. Does anybody else want to have a beer? I'm totally buying." So he's leaning on this gravestone as he's saying this, and he has his EVP recorder sitting there because he had forgotten he had it and it was still on. He'd set it down on the gravestone. And so then much later, when he listened to the footage, he hears very clearly on this, when he says, "Does anybody else want one? I'm buying." a very clear EVP recording of the word yes. And so it becomes that moment that's kind of funny, and then it, here's where it ties in and gets kind of sad. So the gentleman whose gravestone he was leaning on actually is a gentleman who drank himself to death.
Oh.
And so he is not reformed. He'd still like to have at least one more beer before the end of the day. Before the end, I guess. He would like one more. And so this poor kid, just in sheer blind dumb luck, had stumbled onto this gravestone, had asked this question. And it's why we always tell people, when you're doing EVP, you know, there are a certain list of things you can ask, a certain list of things you should always try to ask in order to establish good connection, you know, get information. But this was one of those funnier questions where the very clear answer was for the person giving the answer, of course. But for all of us, just stunning when you hear sort of all this laughter from everybody else in the group, and then you hear several octaves lower, a very clear, very crisp, but very, very sort of scratchy yes.
See, Cloud County has changed. When I went there, there was no classes like that.
Oh, it wasn't a class. It was just something that they had asked me to do as I had told some of these stories, these scary stories I've collected over the years.
I love that you did that. That's so fun that you did that.
Well, you know, if they were good and they did their work and their homework, we would have a little bit of free time, and then they would get to hear the scary stories as the reward.
So I can't wait to take your tour, and everybody can get the information, browngrand.org. Melissa and Tanya, thank you so much for taking time out of your day. This was really fun for me personally, since it was my stomping grounds at one point.
Thank you for having us, Carol. It was really a pleasure getting to share this with you. And we hope that, of course, that you and Lori come, but we hope that other people will come as well and really help us to expand on our offerings here at the theater and in Concordia.
Yeah, I should figure out when we go, and then I should post it. So if anybody's in the area that listens to the Grave Talks, they can join us. That would be fun.
Yeah, we would love that.
And Tanya, thank you so much.
Well, and thank you so much for just letting me come and ramble. I always tell folks, you know, I do this as a volunteer project, because why would you ever pay me to do something I did for this much fun? You know, this is just for fun. And I always tell people, you know, I'll get a few people who are deeply skeptical, and I always tell them that's fine. You don't have to believe in ghosts. You have to believe there's history to a place, and you have to want to come and investigate it. So by all means, please bring that skepticism, but please do bring a spirit of fun and think that we're going to have a big grand adventure, because that's always my goal.
And that wraps up our conversation about the Brown Grand Theater in Concordia, Kansas. For more information on the theater and paranormal investigations, visit their website at browngrand.org. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advanced episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. You can sign up on Apple Podcasts, and you can also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. For all of us here at The Grave Talks, I'm Carol Hughes, and thank you for listening.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.